The time now, 10 o'clock.
Good morning.
This is Bob Allen speaking from the office of the mayor of Minneapolis, Hubert Humphrey, in the City Hall. Feeling that Mr. Average Man doesn't always have the opportunity he should have to express his views before city officials, Mayor Humphrey has instituted what may prove to be something of an innovation in the conduct of city government. The plan is this. On Saturday morning, any Minneapolis resident may come to the office of the mayor from 10 to 12:30 and ask the mayor or members of the council any question that he may have on his mind. We urge you, however, to come early and get on the air with the mayor. The question you ask may be of vital concern to many other Minneapolitans also. And now, here is Mayor Humphrey.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Well, this morning in the office, we have with us a group of our citizens of Minneapolis. We also have with us department heads of the city government and representation from our city council. I think it's only proper that I should say who is here representing our municipal administration. We have Mr. Nathan Harris, our city research engineer. Nathan Harris, of course, is our reservoir of information. Every time we have a question here, Bob, we can't answer, we can always ask our city research engineer. Then we have Mr. Hugo Erickson, our assistant city engineer, one of the main departments of our city government. Glenn McLean of our Department of Police, he's the chief of police. We have Dr. Hill, our city health commissioner. And representing the city council this morning, we have Alderman Moulton. Now, Alderman Moulton, I believe you're from the 10th ward now. Isn't that right, with the new ward lines? Each one of these men are going to participate in the broadcast. They're lifting their eyebrows at me right now, not so sure whether or not they are, whether I'm going to let them in or not, but I can assure you they're going to be asked the really tough questions. Now, the purpose behind this broadcast is just simply that of bringing information to the public about municipal administration. Throughout the week, each and every one of the department heads and the aldermen and the mayor of the city have innumerable questions placed to them about the city affairs. People want to know about their tax rate. They want to know how much do the respective city services cost us. There's a large number of questions these days about the maintenance of our streets, about the cost of our hospital administration. How much are we paying out in taxes for the retirement of our city debt? We have questions about some of our health programs, a follow-up on the chest x-ray. Right before me, I have a pile of letters asking questions about housing, and throughout this broadcast, these letters will be brought in, and I'm going to ask our people who are listening in to try to give us some help on this housing situation, because there are every day a host of very critical cases, people who need housing and need it desperately. Well, now, one of the first questions that I have before we go to our people who are here in the office, a question that has been gleaned out of several letters, this type of question comes in five or six times a week, is why do we have 129 mills tax rate here in the city of Minneapolis? There's always a lot of talk about the tax rate in this city. Now, I think maybe Mr. Harris, our city research engineer, can give us a little information on this. Not only a little. Of course, we only have 30 minutes, Nate, so you will have to confine it down to at least a sizable, let's say, a small portion of that.
Well, Mayor, I think in just a few words, I can broadly indicate how the 129 mil overall tax rate is made up. I think perhaps that might clear up a little confusion on that subject. So far as the overall total of 129 mils is concerned, the fact is that the county and state portion of that levy amounts to about 25%, roughly 32 mil. Mm-hmm. Quarter of the total is county and state levies. Roughly another quarter of the total is made up of levies related to the school. That is, the school operating levy and the levy for teachers' pensions. Roughly about 10% of the total is county and state levies. Roughly another quarter of the total is made up of levies related to the school. That is, the school operating levy and the levy for teachers' pensions. Roughly about 10% of that levy is made up taxes for welfare purposes, hospitals, health department, and other welfare activities. Slightly over 5% of the levy is made up of the requirements of the park and the library board. And the balance, something like 35-36%, are the levies for which the city council is responsible, and that covers the requirements of all of these city activities of fire and police and lighting, and also covers the debt service on the city bonds. I think that briefly is a rough outline of how the 129 mills is made up.
Well, thank you very much, Nate. As a matter of fact, if you'll permit me, I'll just give one specific detail. Out of our tax dollar, I should say the per capita cost for debt retirement in the city of Minneapolis is About $13.07. That's the per capita cost. Now, a lot of people have asked, why do we have this big municipal debt? And I think the frank answer to that, and obviously the answer is that the good portion of that debt, the very sizable portion, is due to the tremendous relief costs that we had in the 1930s, when the city of Minneapolis was compelled by necessity of taking care of its own people to finance its public welfare or its relief costs by bonded indebtedness. Now, thanks very much for the information you gave us on that problem of the 129 mills, Mr. Harris, because I know that people are very much concerned about it, and I want to just restate that county and state levies, as you pointed out, take about 25% of it, and that the school levies take about another 25%. I think that's correct. As a matter of fact, our per capita school cost in the city of Minneapolis today is $25.89 per person. In other words, if you have a family of four, your average cost would be around $100 a year. Of course, that doesn't apply all the way through because of taxes on commercial properties and so forth. Now, just another question that we have here. Many times, Mr. McLean, you're the chief of police. Many times we have questions about this police department of ours. People want to know, for example, how come there isn't a patrolman out in my corner? We used to have a lot more patrolmen around the city of Minneapolis. I've had many of the old-timers come in here and say that when they were young men in the city, there seemed to be a police officer on every corner, and that there always seemed to be much more police protection, particularly in the Loop area. Will you please give us some information on that?
Well, of course, in the past 20 to 25 years, there's been considerable change made in working conditions. I can speak somewhat from my own experience of 24 and a half years. At the time that I first went on the department, the working day of the police department was 6.5 days a week. In other words, we received 2 days off a month. We received no holidays and a 14-day vacation. Of course, naturally, out of the 545 men at that time, most of them were working most of the time. Now we've reached a point where we enjoy approximately the same working conditions that other persons do. We have a 40-hour week, and the increase in personnel has been increased to a point present time of 622. But when you stop to realize the comparison of a 40-hour week with the total week, there are 168 hours in each week. The police department, of course, has to have coverage during those entire 168 hours. So that takes considerable men, it takes a little over 4 men, to cover one given location. And also, we have the same holidays now that the average individual has, and the vacation has been increased for men with more than 10 years service to 3 weeks. And we're operating with 4 less men than we're allowed at the present time. And I think perhaps before we reach a point where we do have an eligible list, our total loss will probably be 8 or 9.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. McLean. That was our chief of police, Glenn McLean, talking to you about the police department. I think one or two other facts might be added that you may want to know, that the per capita cost, that is, each person in the city of Minneapolis during the year pays approximately $3.97 for police protection in this city. Now, I doubt whether any of you could hire your own private agent or your own personal protection for $3.97 per person. I think it should be pointed out that our city has likewise grown in size, and while it has grown in size, the increase in manpower hasn't kept pace with the increase in population, or let us say the increase in the traffic problem. Just one idea. People always ask, well, why do we have such a traffic problem? It's quite simple, folks. We have a traffic problem because we have about twice as many cars in the streets as we used to. We have about 100,000 more people now than we had, let's say, 20 years ago in the city of Minneapolis, all of which adds up to a great deal more a problem of our traffic flow and traffic control in the city of Minneapolis. Now, I think it might be wise at this particular time, Bob, if you take some of these people and take the questions that they have, and we'll come back to a few of these particular problems.
All right, Mayor Humphrey, I'd like to have you meet Mrs. K.W. Donelski of 310 South 8th Street in Minneapolis, who has a question to ask you. Mrs. Donelski?
I just want to know what can be done about the boys running around the street and skirting, using the skirt guns on people.
Using squirt guns on people,
yes,
is that right?
And, another lady and I was coming, going to church, and that's what we was greeted with, dirty water from the squirt gun, all over our faces and our clothes.
Well, that's a problem I am sure that necessitates more than just city action. I appreciate your question. There isn't any way in the world, I suppose, that a young man or woman or a boy or a girl can Be brought to realize that they're living in a civilized society any better than by their parents. And, of course, may I say that lots of boys that I've known, I might even admit myself that at the tender age of 10 or 11, I used a squirt gun. I'm not sure whether or not that was out on the streets, however. I think, let me say, if this is continues, if it's something that is molesting, that there is one way, definitely, that we can do something about it. If you wish to call the police department, our juvenile bureau, we'll look into that situation and see whether or not it's a problem that comes because of the fact that boys are just getting out of hand out in that neighborhood, or whether there's something can be done by talking to their parents. We appreciate your question.
All right, Mayor Humphrey, I have a young man here, Sheldon Mills of 4137 10th Avenue South. What would you like to ask the mayor?
What should we do when the parks are too far away and we can't play in the street and our yards are too small to play any baseball in?
Well, that's a real good question there. That was Sheldon Mills, is that
Sheldon
right?
Sheldon Mills, that's right.
He has a couple of his buddies down here this morning. That's a question, by the way, Sheldon, that the Park Board is giving a good deal of consideration to right now. I imagine, Sheldon, that you read the papers pretty closely, and possibly you've noticed that within the last 2 or 3 weeks, the Minneapolis Park Board has outlined a program of park development in areas of the city where we do not have these big parks. You see, the trouble, Sheldon, here is that the best parks, the biggest parks, are in the areas of the city sometimes where the newer houses are located. That is where the city was more recently planned and developed. Now, there's going to be a real park development program in the areas closer into the Loop District, in the areas where we are lacking of playground facilities. I can also tell you, Sheldon, that we refer many of the problems, such as you have, to some of our volunteers. Facilities. I can also tell you, Sheldon, that we refer many of the problems, such as you have, to some of our volunteer committees. We have a youth welfare committee here. We have our Council of Social Agencies. We have our neighborhood houses. Those groups help us find parking playground space. Thank you. That's a good question.
Mayor Humphrey, here is Mrs. George Fergus of 2814 Hayes Street, Northeast in Minneapolis. Mrs. Fergus?
Well, I have been down here several times to see about my taxes. I have protested the last 2 years because my taxes are too high. I pay $169 or $164 a year on a five-room bungalow. And all my street improvements and everything is paid for. My alley is paid for. And I don't know why I should pay that big a tax. I have been down here several times to see Mr. Gould. I have never been able to see him. And I also want to know why we should pay for tree trimming. I think the tree trimming should come under the general tax, as has been done in the last years. And we're never asked what we want to do or have a chance to have anything explained to us. All we do is to get something on our taxes added every year. I know in the last 5-6 years my taxes have been raised, and I don't know why. I'd like to find out.
I'll start answering that question, Bob, and if you'll start moving your microphone over to Mr. Harris, I'm sure that he can give us a little more answer. But let me just say this. One of the last things that you said was that in the last 4 or 5 years, your taxes have been going up. And that's true. Your taxes have gone up since 1945. The millage of 1945 was 100 mills, and it had been that way for several years. Now, I think it's only fair to say that everything that I know of has been going up since 1945. You see, the city of Minneapolis can't carry on its business with a growing city with less tax revenue. I have before me the reports of the city purchasing agent. We used to be able to buy coal, for example, for our schools, for our public buildings at around $5 a ton. Now we pay $14 a ton. We used to be able to buy sand for taking care of the sanding of the streets for around 18 cents a ton. Now we pay over 60 cents a ton. We used to be able to buy brick and mortar and cement, you know, at a cost about one half of what we pay now. And when you stop and think about it, $164 a year taxes gives you police protection, fire protection, health protection, it's parks and playgrounds. If you want to go to the library, you can go to the library. You don't even have to buy any books. You can go up in the library and have free library service. Besides that, if you have children or any of your relatives have children, you have public education for your people, young people in the city of Minneapolis. I say that $164 tax bill, while it's a burden, it's perfectly true. But when you stop and think about what you get for $164 from the municipality in terms of the services which are available, really, I think you're getting quite a bargain. Now, Nate, maybe you got something you'd like to add on that, why these taxes have gone up.
Well, yes, Mayor, I think something might be said. As I understood that question, there really were two parts to it. One was the question of what you can do about her tax being so high. Mm-hmm. I think I might suggest that within a month or two, There will begin a series of meetings one day each month by the City Board of Equalization. And that body is the body that meets up on the third floor of the City Hall before which any property taxpayer may appear and ask why the property is valued the way it is. There may be a question there of the valuation of the property. Mm-hmm. If the valuation is improper, that Board of Equalization has a chance to go over it and explain all of the facts, and the person that has a complaint can appear there and have the matter straightened out that way. The principal trouble there may be a matter of valuation. Now, the second question, as I understood it, had to do with why there is an assessment for tree trimming. Well, now, that arises because of a state law, the latest version of which was passed in the 1947 session of the legislature, which authorized a program of tree trimming in Minneapolis and provided for an assessment not occurring more than once in 5 years. And that procedure is under the provisions of the state law.
Is that satisfactory, Mrs. Fergus, or would you like to say more? Just a moment, please. I'll come down there.
I'd like to say this, Mr. Mayor. You say we have police protection. Maybe this is a small item to some of you people, but when you've got a man that's got to work for his living and the same as you all have to do, I had a neighbor that had a dog that barked all night. I called up the East Side Police Station 3 times about it. They didn't do a thing about it. They didn't even come near there. They asked me if I thought they were dog catchers when I wanted to report it. It wasn't only me that reported it. It was several people that reported it. And that's the answer that we got from the East Side Police Station.
Well, I'm awfully sorry if that's the answer that you got. And may I say that if you'd have written the mayor a letter, we would have gone out to see or checked on that East Side Police Station to see what had been the fault out there. I might state very frankly that, as Mr. McLean, our chief of police, pointed out, that we, while dogs are barking, they're not always the easiest to apprehend. In the meantime, while some dogs are barking, we have a few burglars running around, and it's important that we try to catch them, too. I appreciate your question, and that's one of the reasons that we've got this broadcast. Now you've had your chance, and I hope you remember is what Mr. Harris told you about your taxes. I think that's a little bit more important than the dog barking. If you have a problem about your taxes and you feel that you're overassessed, that the valuation is too high, you come down to the Board of Equalization. As far as the tree trimming is concerned, that's a state law, and we must operate within the state law. Now, Bob, I want to ask a question to our assistant city engineer that's here this morning, Mr. Hugo Erickson. Hugo, I have a question here that reads from just a letter came in this morning, as a matter of fact. Is it possible to purchase from the city paving bricks which are discarded because of irregular size or which are in excessive requirements? Then the man asked, if this is possible, what is the procedure and who is the person that I am to contact?
Well, Mr. Mayor, under the present conditions, the City of Minneapolis Paving Department, in connection with its replacement of wood blocks, which I imagine this question refers to, has been utilizing the wood blocks as fuel at the incinerator plant. We have been doing that since 1945. And it's been a good thing to the extent that we have saved perhaps $10,000 in operating costs on that item alone, fuel item. And so the answer to the question is that there aren't any wood blocks available at the present time for sale.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Erickson. By the way, Bob, one of our other aldermen just came in. Alderman George Tuttle came in from the 12th Ward. George, we'll get you roped in on this. Believe me, I'm sure that there'll be a question or two here that'll apply right out in your neighborhood. Now, do you want to take the next question there?
Yes, Mayor. We have another question here from Mrs. Herman Stanky at 2105 St. Anthony Boulevard. Is Mrs. Stanky here? She's here, but I believe you asked that we do not put you on the air. Is that correct? Her question paralleled the one of Mrs. Fergus in regard to tree trimming, which has already been answered. Was that answered to your satisfaction? She wants to know the definition of a revolving fund. Is that right?
Of a revolving fund? Well, I'll give you just my point of view on this, but we have an expert here, and that's why we have these department heads. Nate, you have all the information, do you not, about revolving funds? The real beginning purpose is to have a cash fund to work from. Now, Mr. Harris will explain to you why that's set up and why we have that revolving fund.
Well, Mayor, I think you've explained it, but I might add that the revolving fund sounds mysterious. It's really very simple. It's a fund set up for the purpose of financing, in the first instance, the cost. It's a fund set up for the purpose of financing, in the first instance, the cost of certain street improvements. Then those costs are assessed against the properties benefited by those improvements. The assessments, when collected, go back into that fund, the revolving fund, and so it turns over. Money paid out for improvements, money coming back from assessment. And that way it revolves.
Very good. Thank you very much. Now, Bob, do you have another question there that...
This lady here would like to carry on this conversation
a
little bit longer.
Yes, all right. Go right ahead.
Well, why is it that just some of us have it on our tax statements and some haven't?
Why is it just some have it on?
Yes.
Well, that I think, from as I understand it, we have these projects of street improvement, and there are assessments made to abutting properties. Now, Mr. Harris, do you have anything more that you'd like to add under that? We're keeping Bob Allen here busy running up and down the line with this roving microphone.
No, Mayor, I think you've answered that one. The point is that the revolving fund is used to finance particular projects in particular locations.
Right.
It isn't a general citywide operation, and therefore some property would have it on their tax statement and others would not, depending upon where the improvement is.
I think I should tell you that that's exactly the question that my wife asked me when we got our tax statement here the other day. She says, how come we have a street improvement notation on the tax statement? And I had to do a little municipal education on the home front out there to show that that this just wasn't something that was being placed in our neighborhood just because one or two of us had a tax bill coming through there, see? All right, Bob, is there another written statement there?
Yes, we have one. We have another lad here, a little Mills boy. Are you the brother of the one we had on before?
Yeah.
You are. Well, did you want to ask the mayor something about baseball, too?
Yeah, well, I know it's for our own safety, but when we get home from school, I don't get home till about 4:30, and then eat about 5 or something like that, and just get down to the park, and you have to come right home again.
Well, you mean, what did you mean, that you wanted to play in the street
or
something?
Yeah, something like that. And, you can't play in the yard or anything.
You can't
anything.
Play in the street? Can you play in the park? Is the park
open? Well, sometimes they have these leagues.
I'm trying to get this problem clarified before the mayor answers.
I know. They have the league games, and the umpires kick you out down there.
You mean that you can't play in the street because it's against the city regulation, and you can't play in the park because the leagues are playing? All right, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I'm going to let the chief of police answer that one. I bet he has something to say about it.
Well, I'm going to talk to you only about the playing in the street. You realize that the number of cars in Minneapolis is getting greater and greater each year, and also the number of accidents every year. I think that most people perhaps are familiar with the number of persons killed, and we have been able to hold that down. I think we've done that because we've cut down considerably on the speeding. But it seems that we can't cut down the number of persons injured and the number of accidents as a whole. It's certain that if the boys and girls play out in the street, they're bound to be injured, and we're doing everything possible to avoid that injury. I'll let the mayor talk to you regarding the park playground situation. Of course, I'm just kind of wondering there, son, you talk about getting home at 4:30. What do they do, keep you after school once in a while?
Not this young man. I want to tell you that it's very encouraging to have... I think we have 3 young men down here today. That's early start and good citizenship. And all of the adults that are here, you know, are very appreciative of the fact that we've had some young fellows that will come on down and get on this broadcast with us. Now, before you go into that next question, Bob, I have a question here that came up just on the telephone while we were having this broadcast. A lady just called in, and she wanted to know, to whom do we report a health hazard? Now, we have Dr. Hill here of the City Health Department. Bob, and if you'll get over here with that microphone, I got a couple of questions to ask him. But, Doctor, maybe you can tell them who ought to hear about a health hazard.
The City Health Department ought to get a letter, and usually if you do not sign your name, you do not have as much attention paid to it. There's no danger, however, in putting your name on the letter because that is confidential information. And your name will never be revealed unless we get court action to make us reveal it.
All right, Doctor, I have another question. A letter came in this last week. You know, we had this big chest X-ray survey in the city of Minneapolis. And one of the letters that I had asked, well, now we've had the survey, we read all about it, we saw the feature article in Look magazine, the letter went on and said, what are we doing about it? Now, what's happening on this chest X-ray survey?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, there are about 6,000 people who were referred either to their own physicians or to the public health center across the street for further study. As far as a follow-up program in terms of the whole program, we are hoping to work a program out with the Hennepin County Tuberculosis Association in the next few weeks.
I think we ought to just pay a little word of tribute, too, to the city of Minneapolis and to its health department, to all the cooperating agencies, that this was the greatest single public health program that's ever been undertaken, I understand, in the country, in terms of tuberculosis control, at least, and all diseases of chest and heart. All right, Bob, do you have another question there?
Yes, Mayor Humphrey, I'd like to have you meet Mr. A.N. Lewis, A.W. Lewis, I beg your pardon, 2506 Stinson Boulevard. Mr. Lewis, would you ask your question of the mayor?
Well, it has regard to taxpaying, the trimming of the trees, and I'd like to know how they arrive at those prices that they charge. They've got me charged where I've got one tree with four branches on it, and they charge me $23.30 for trimming that one tree.
That's a pretty expensive rate.
Well, I think so.
I'll tell you what I'm going to suggest on that. We've had several questions, and Mr. Allen, if you keep his slip aside there, I'm going to, your name is Mr. Lewis, is that right?
Lewis is right.
I'm going to ask you to go to the park board. Now, the superintendent of the park board is Mr. Charles Dole. And one of the purposes of this broadcast is there are some questions where the information we'll not have at our fingertips, but you have a right to have an answer to that good question. All right, would you like to come on over here? And here's Mr. Moulton on the park board, and he can give some information on it.
Well, it's only that the tree that's in front of your house doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the park board. So they trim all of the trees in a given area, for instance, a block, and equalize the charge regardless of whether you happen to have a tree in front of your house or not. The idea is that it beautifies the whole area, and you benefit through having the trees in front of your neighbor's house trimmed.
Fine, thank you. And if you want more information, go to see Mr. Dole. We're going to have to speed along here, Bob. I have another question that came in the mail, if you don't mind, and that is in reference to Freedom Train. Now, that doesn't apply particularly to the city, but Mr. Carl Myers is here, who is the chairman of the Freedom Train program. And Carl, would you tell him, when is Freedom Train coming to Minneapolis, and how long is it going to be here?
Well, we're very, very fortunate, Your Honor, in having the train here 4 days, where normally they can have it only here one day. It'll be here May 3, 4, 5, and 6, and it'll be located at the State Fair grounds. We're having a joint program with St. Paul. St. Paul will have 2 days, and we'll have 2 days. But the week prior to that, rededication week, is the week that we're more interested in than we are just the train itself. We're having a joint program with St. Paul. St. Paul will have 2 days, and we'll have 2 days. But the week prior to that, rededication week, is the week that we're more interested in than we are just the train itself.
Well, thank you very much. The Freedom Train, of course, carries with it all the historic documents of early American history, and I know people are going to be very interested in it. Now, you have another written question? Well, I have one here that I want to ask. I've had a lot of questions, Mr. Erickson, about the storm sewer program. You know, when the spring rains come and the snow starts to melt, people say our basement is being flooded. The storm sewers aren't working. Many a person has said to me, well, we have been promised storm sewers. How come we don't have them? Bob, will you get down here and see if you can't pick up Mr. Erickson? Hugo Erickson, our assistant city engineer, will give a little information on the storm sewers.
Mr. Mayor, the storm program is still underway, but like all post-war construction, its progress has been retarded by the scarcity of critical materials and also the lack of skilled mechanics and labor.
Well, thank you very much. Bob, I said in the early part of this broadcast I needed some help. And not only do I need help, but here's some families that need help. Here's a letter that I have from a young married couple. They have a family, and they're in a desperate need of having some housing. They have a little baby, a 6-month-old son, and they have been looking all over the city of Minneapolis for a place in which to live. They're being evicted. There isn't anything that can be done to prevent that eviction. They've had all adequate notice. And I ask anybody that has any information as to a 2- or 3-room apartment, any type of housing facility, to call into the mayor's office to write me a letter and let me know. Now, there's another one where a young man has two daughters, a man and his wife, and he is in desperate need of a housing situation, housing facilities, I should say. He's got a housing situation. All right, that about concludes our broadcast, isn't it, Bob? I want to thank WDGY, and if you'll sign us off here, we'll call this a day.
Thank you ever so much, Mayor Humphrey. You've been listening to the Municipal Forum, coming from the office of Mayor Hubert Humphrey in the Minneapolis City Hall. Each Saturday morning from 10 to 12:30, anyone in Minneapolis who has a question that he'd like answered may come to the office of the mayor and put the question directly to His Honor or any member of the City Council or any department head. Now remember, from 10 to 10:30, WDGY will broadcast this program also. So if you have a question which you feel will concern many other residents of the Mill City, come early and get on the air with the mayor. You'll be doing a service to your neighbor if you do. This is Bob Allen speaking. We return you now to our studios.
WDGY, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Minneapolis.